We continue our discussion with Emmanuel and Alan, touching on payments, quality issues, and the conducive policy and regulatory environment required for the free trade area to be operationalized.
It's one thing to finance intra-African trade, but facilitating payments across the continent while preserving value will require further efforts. How could we potentially go about this?
Okay, so basically that's a very good question. I think at the end of the day, when we talk about the African Continental Free Trade Area, we're always referencing private sector, believing that private sector will come to our rescue and solve everything. But even private sector needs to find ways of financing its engagement to the whole AFTA process. And with AFTA in particular, financing it is a very, very, very big conversation. There are all sorts of things by Afro Champions and all these other groups and so on and so forth. But for some of us, we believe that if we are to make the conversation on the African Continental Free Trade Area coherent, it's then about going back to basis, which is then going back to the AU institutions themselves. When you look at the AU Constitutive Act, there's Article 19. Article 19 speaks to institutions of the AU. So the Article 19 references AU institutions that have to deal with financing Africa's integration. So that is the African Investment Bank, African Monetary Fund, and then African Central Bank. African Central Bank is supposed to be located in Lagos, African Monetary Fund in Cameroon, and then African Investment Bank in Libya. Okay, so now we know the challenges that Libya has had, two states, and also so on and so forth. Lagos is a more stable conversation when it comes to financing. And then Cameroon has had its own issues as well. But the conversation around Article 19 institutions for me has not been expanded enough. We do not have enough of that conversation when it comes to the African Continental Free Trade Area, especially at a time when the UN Economic Commission for Africa was saying in its report in 2019 that AFTA is not just about intra-African trade, but it is about dispelling the crisis of implementation around AU, its programming, and validating Agenda 2063, which is to say, therefore, that if we were able to build the momentum on the African Continental Free Trade Area, then surely we must be able to build it around the other AU institutions that have not been functioning, the AU protocols that we have not been paying much attention to, including the Freedom of Movement Protocol and all these other AU things that we talk about. So for me, even as we talk about the Pan-African payment settlement systems, which I believe is on stream from Afro-Exim Bank and so on, they are the ones that are ensuring that it'll be possible for merchants to link up with markets and so on and be able to make that payment. For me, there's also the conversation to be had at the regional level, because at the regional level, for example, I can tell you in West Africa, we have a so-called eco currency, which has not really materialized. That's from the West Africa Monetary Zone countries, the six countries of Anglophone-speaking countries. That's Ghana, Guinea is not Anglophone, but it joined the West Africa Monetary Zone. So that's Ghana, Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Gambia. These were the six countries that were supposed to come together with the ECO and then start the common currency in West Africa and then join it with the French one of the CFR. Now, I'm referencing this in particular because we might have heard a couple of months ago that the French President Macron was talking about the fact that, they canceled the debts that have been tied to the CFR, the French-speaking, and therefore the West African Common Currency was going to come on stream. And at the time that we were all talking after, it sounded exciting. But of course, there are many of us who were also skeptical about the fact that, the French still want to find ways in which they can, still maintain control over Francophone West Africa. So, but the regional, because the reason why I make this point is because it is still an important conversation to have at the regional level and link it up with AFTA, because one of the solutions, therefore, that came out of West Africa being able to, you know, use its own currencies across the world was therefore then to link it to either either the Naira or to Cedi, just be able to use the Cedi, Ghana Cedi, and have its equivalent convertible in Nigeria, in Gambia, and all the other six countries. So I think what we can, going forward for the African Continental Free Trade Area, we can look at regional options, because I believe in Southern Africa as well. There's Southern Africa also has a system. You would know it better. So obviously, Cabello would be able to tell me about how they're working with even the mobile money systems over there to be able to use that to make it easier to cross-border transactions. So all of these things are going on, but I think we have not had a coherent conversation about it yet. We are talking a lot about the Pan-African payment settlement systems, but I feel that since regional economic communities are still an important reference point for many Africans, we could have clusters where we are talking about it. How could it be done in Southern Africa, in Eastern Africa, in West Africa, and so on and so forth? Because even in the whole conversation on AFTA, let's really, really be realistic. The North Africans have not been very active in when it comes to the African Continental Free Trade Area. So here we are trying to say we're going to have a bigger market and 1.2 billion and all these other figures. And yet we have a part of Africa that is not really making itself inclusive in the process of the Continental Free Trade Area. So how then do you feel in your different regions that we can all come together? And I think that's a problem. We need to begin to say, what are the strengths that we all have as our regions? And what can we bring together to complement what is on offer at the Pan-African Payment Settlement Systems that Afrexim Bank is offering to help with payment for the African Continental Free Trade Area? In East Africa, for example, we know that East Africa, Kenya in particular, pioneered M-Pesa. Yeah. So Kenya and East Africa generally are very good on cross-border, even cross-border mobile money transactions. We don't have the same thing in West Africa. It could be a lot better in West Africa. In Southern Africa, the level at which it could also be up to the scale of Eastern Africa and so on. So it is uneven. And so for me, I think that a more coherent strategy that would involve a conversation about Article 19 institutions, how we can bring them on board to be more coherent on the conversation on financing AFTA, plus what is happening at the regional economic communities level. I think this is the way forward on financing intra-African trade, because otherwise, we will be in a big fix because at the end of the day, trading is about money. How quickly is your money able to move from one country to another, or from one part of the world to another, and so on? So we need to acknowledge the fact that there are the challenges that we have, include the fact that there are things that are already there that we have not refined, we have not unpacked well enough. So is this the time that we do so? Do we come together under an AU strategy and say, let's include the regional, what obtains at the regional level, and bring it together to offer coherence at the continental level? So for me, that is how I would answer this question, for a more coherent conversation. I think what we have is okay, but it is not coherent enough. And if we are to make progress on the African Continental Free Trade Area and the financing, we need to look at the strengths that already exist within the regional economic communities, how they can be brought on board to the continental level for the AFTA Secretariat to pick it up in concert with what they're offering with the Pan-African Payment Settlement Systems. Because by all means, there are going to be even challenges with what is on offer with Afriexim Bank. I've heard a lot about it, but in Ghana, I don't even know how it works, how any merchant in Ghana would want to connect it, because there's not even enough education about it. It's just, you know, the fact that that is what is on offer. So there's a lot of awareness raising that needs to happen, not just on the AFTA itself, but even the payments settlement systems. That's one of the reasons why I think it's a very good question that you have asked, for us to begin thinking about how we bring greater attention and greater pressure to bear on our policymakers to help us better understand where how we move from this state of oblivion, so to speak, to a place where we all are clear on how we are going to make payments when we begin to trade as individuals with the after process.
Thank you so much. Before even Amanda proceeds with another question, I think you're raising an important issue because it reminds me of a conversation I was having with a friend the other day who mentioned that they were trying to buy something in South Africa and, they couldn't, their visa could not be allowed in the country. And this is their visa card. So to have those dynamics and challenges on a day-to-day for someone who wants to try and purchase something from another part of the continent, and now you're speaking about the AfCFTA, how practical is that going to be to a normal person who is trying to buy something in another country? And those are the challenges that we are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And to find that they had to ask someone from Namibia to buy into the country, South Africa, it was just problematic. And I think it's something that perhaps the policymakers must come down to the people and mm-hmm. find out what are their day-to-day challenges and what do we have in place. And I'm glad that you have managed to touch on that.
Interesting. Payments is definitely something that we could talk about on and on. I'm particularly very excited to see all the innovation in terms of digital payment platforms. And I do hope that they will eventually spread across Africa. Moving away from payments and onto another hindrance to intra-African trade, there's always been questions around price and quality, with most consumers traditionally preferring imported goods and services, and they're willing to pay higher prices for imported goods and services. Alan, how would exporters gain the confidence of new markets?
Thank you so much, Amanda. That question takes me back to understand economists yourself. It takes me back to economics basics, supply and demand, and the determination of price. And so, of course, that one baffles the mind because we export commodities, raw materials, and then bring them back as finished products, and we are paying a premium on these products. Whereas we could have been producing, for instance, with copper, we could have been making all the stuff here. That has been a key one because there's always been the perception, as you've rightly said, that made out of Africa is actually better. If you remember when we were growing up, there was always made in the UK. You'd know it's actually quality. And the basics behind that was that there was a whole issue of quality standards, Mark. The fact that you could trust that if I'm buying a plug from the UK, it's not going to blow up. So the whole issue of standards is really behind the price and the preference, and it has been traditionally behind the price and the preference. And so we have to do quite a lot to harmonize standards, to improve standards, first of all, to reach international standards, but also to harmonize standards across the region. So for instance, if I'm buying a loaf of bread, say from Kenya, or if I'm buying a car made in Kenya, I should know that it's the same quality of car I would get if I were importing it from China or from India. So the first thing is to improve our standards, and they're already international approved standards, and we as Trademark are working to boost the capacity of standards organizations, for instance, the Uganda National Bureau of Standards, the Kenya Bureau of Standards, and the rest, to be able to enforce standards that have been agreed at national level. However, at international and regional level, to facilitate trade, we need to harmonize standards. You will not have Kenya having one standard, Nigeria having another standard, Egypt having another standard. We have to have harmonized standards. And these standards are harmonized at an international level and at a regional level. For instance, within the East African community, there are agreed standards that facilitate the movement of goods. Now, as we enter into a new regime of the Continental Free Trade Area, we are going to have to look at continental standards. And we have the African Regional Standards Organization, ASO, that is looking at coming up with standards to ensure mutual recognition and also harmonization of standards across borders. So standards are very critical for us to see. But then the other issues that I imagine, you find that many people now, many countries are pushing back on multilateralism and pushing back to nationalism. And really wanting to promote their goods. So you have in Uganda, Buy Uganda, Build Uganda. In Kenya, you have Made in Kenya. You have Made in Rwanda. And all across South Africa has its own. So you're finding that there's this protectionism that it's good for nascent industries. But if we are to have something that really can be traded across Africa, we might want also to look at Made in Africa. And I know there are many calls where people have been saying, why don't we brand Made in Africa? Because if you look at, say, Airbus is made from parts from over 100 countries, maybe, that the tires are from here, the buttons are from here, the leather, and it's one product. If we can look at producing, improving regional value chains and actually have products that are made across a number of countries, we could promote Made in Africa so that we are genuinely proud of having products that meet international regional standards and are made here. But away from the issue of standards, there are also other determinants of why people are buying elsewhere. Right now, there are increasing standards on labor standards. Are these goods made by slaves? Yeah. Are these made in factories that are not regulated? So people are shunning increasingly. And you saw yesterday CNN had a campaign, and people are saying, I'll not buy again if this has been made in a factory. That is, so even as Africa industrializes and as we seek to grow, we must ensure that we maintain labor standards, that we do not, that these are content. So environmental standards are increasingly also impacting on preferences. You're going to find traders, we traditionally export our flowers, our vegetables, and our fruits to Europe, but that the consumer there is becoming more discerning. They will not import anything that has been modified. They will not import anything that is produced with poor environmental standards or without care to the environment. So we've had a lot of backlash, for instance, on our avocado, because avocado has such a huge detriment on the environment in terms of the water and all. So even now, people want, and that's not just in Europe, even African consumers are going to start asking and demanding, is this cotton made organically? Are these vegetables organic? So there's all these preferences that are going to impact, not just the price. So even as we industrialize and as we expand our business, we are going to want to ensure that we meet many of these requirements and customer preferences. The whole issue of the natural. Right now with COVID, we have seen the impact of not having a good diet. So people are moving back to natural, to vegan, to eating food that is well-prepared and raw. So all these things are actually determining. So if, for instance, Uganda wants to export to Nigeria, you're going to have the capacity of people who can import the products from Uganda really wanting products, for instance, that are not genetically modified and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Great. Moving on to SMEs. SMEs are something that keep on coming up in every conversation we have. And specifically for Africa, they do account for over 90% of business. And of course, Alan, you would know this better than anyone else. They also contribute to at least 80% of employment stats. And this is across Africa. How can SMEs in Africa capitalize on the formation of the Continental Free Trade Area?
Okay, thank you so much, Amanda. And that's a really important question because we've seen that the first movers have been big business. We've seen the likes of the banks, Ecobank, the likes of Dangote Group have really been first movers in moving across the continent. But where are the SMEs? So one of the things that we've been looking at is how can SMEs be supported to actually feed into that value chain? So for instance, if Dangote is sourcing for his cement or if Ecobank is sourcing within the services value chain, how can we support SMEs to be able to meet the standards and to be part and parcel of this growth story, especially as organizations like ShopRite, ShopRite is spreading across Africa. Why should it be selling products that are not made in those countries? Why shouldn't the SMEs supply? So again, the whole issue of standards comes in and all, but I wanted to split that question into two. So there are the internal factors that SMEs must deal with. When you look at what is an SME, a small, medium enterprise, I mean, if you look in the developed world, SME will be something of under $5 million. In Africa, SME of $5 million is a huge company. You know, if you're turning over $5 million a year, that's already a big company. So SMEs are really quite small. They're micro. Some of them, they're small, turning over $100,000, $200,000, maybe $1 million. And those are really in the big range. So they are going to have to work on a lot on the internal issues, governance structures, business development, capacity building, bookkeeping, all those things that keep an organization thriving. Now, on the external environment, there's so many issues that undermine the capacity of SMEs to take advantage of the CFTA. The costs and time in doing business. Right now, for instance, the procedures at borders, the red tape, the bureaucracy, all these things undermine the capacity of business. Because with the CFTA, with the African Continental Free Trade Area, tariffs have been removed on 90% of product lines. So, for instance, if you want to move your goods to South Africa, there may not be tariff lines, so market access is there. But market entry becomes a problem. You actually getting your goods to move from Uganda to South Africa, you've gotten a deal as an SME, you've gotten to produce maybe leather shoes. Uganda has very good hides and skins. You've been able to convince the South African ShopRite to supply them with shoes. Supplying and entering that market becomes a challenge. The red tape, the bureaucracy, the transport challenges along the border, moving goods, the high cost of transport, it actually puts a high markup on the total cost of the product. So there are all these things that undermine and deter small business from moving. And that's why you find most small business get used to what they are doing, working within their borders and not expanding. Then they need also to aggregate. And so one of the things we're trying to see is the backward and forward linkages. If you're looking at a producer of mango pulp juice, for instance, how can we ensure that this producer is tapping into the farmers who are producing mangoes so that we actually support the value chain? Some of the best value chains that have been talked about in our region, for instance, the harmony between the cattle processing in Botswana and the car manufacturing in South Africa, where you're able to have access and entry for the leather coming from Botswana to input into the car manufacturing business in South Africa. That is one of the more developed regional value chains. But you have to ensure that the market entry aspects are really catered for. So whole issues of rules of origin, capacity of these SMEs to really access that market and sustain that market. You know, it's a lot of work that has to be done. But we are up for the challenge, I think. We are up for the challenge because as we see, the market is huge. The potential is huge, over 1.2 billion people. With this market alone, this is how China grew, that just having a ready market. If we can just support SMEs to address some of these challenges internally and externally, I think the opportunities are great.
Wow, awesome. And moving along to policy and regulatory infrastructure in this AFCFTA mission and vision, Emmanuel, what would the conducive policy, regulatory infrastructure and political environment look like for the AFCFTA to thrive? And what do you see as the current imbalances in the different regions of Africa?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that question. A very important question once again. For a conducive policy, regulatory infrastructure, I think what we would like to see with that is an environment in which all the institutions of the AU are talking with each other. Because already we have with the AU, we have the PIDA program, which is the program infrastructure development agency. And they have a PIDA week. I think they've had it since 2015. They have PIDA week for the past 6 years that has been looking at developments around infrastructure on the continent. You know, what is the state of play of infrastructure in this region and that region? What are the merits, demerits? How far have they come? That kind of thing. And in the last one that they held in January, the sixth PIDA week, they spoke, participants spoke to the whole issue of the role that AFTA would play around infrastructure, the role of infrastructure around AFTA. And it makes sense because if you're going to trade, you need to have good trade corridors. You need to have good roads. All of these things are part of the infrastructure, the hard and soft infrastructure that we often talk about. Ports, harbors, all these things. So those member states that are, you know, very adept on conversing with the blue economy, for example, you need ports, harbors, things that would be conducive to making the blue economy efficient, because even that is part of the infrastructure that you're talking about when you talk about African Continental Free Trade Area. It is not just about roads alone or setting up corridors, but all of these things as a collective matter. So for me, I think it's always important to get back to linking the AFTA with some of the AU protocols that already exist. And I'm very happy to see that in January, this conversation was being had in Addis, where PISA was being referenced. Because at the end of the day, I think if infrastructure is going to get a big boost in the conversation on AFTA, I think PISA, the Program of Infrastructure Development Agency of the AU, will have to have a major say, because they've been having this conversation for the past 5.5 years. And I think now that AFTA is here, they still need to play a very, very critical part. So that would be coordinating all the AU agencies that are responsible for not necessarily infrastructure, but the overall conversation on roads and all these things. So for me, it is about pulling these AU institutions back in, revamping them, getting them to, you know, building the capacity to see what they can also do for AFTA. Because I think we're getting to the stage where a lot of people, I think Alan talked very rightly in her conversation and response on SMEs, that the big guns have been the ones to respond very quickly on AFTA. But it's, the SMEs have been the ones that have not been able to act so quickly because they don't have the big capital. And who are the ones that have are going to offer this big capital? The same ones who will also be able to help with the creating and supporting the infrastructure that we see. So I think for me, it is a simple conversation on ensuring that we pull in, we rope in these AU institutions that need to start talking about, that have already started the conversation on infrastructure, to ensure that policy is in place for the regulatory environment. Secondly, you know, at the end of the day, the trade corridors, there's so many trade corridors that are in existence on the continent. And I think it was in preparation for some program that I realized that we have over 50 trade corridors. I think the ECA has a very exhaustive list on this. We have some that are linking West Africa to Central Africa, all the way to East Africa. Some have been started since the 70s. It's never been completed. We have the LAPSET, I think the one that's been connecting East Africa. And then there's been some that are connecting East Africa to Southern Africa. All these trade corridors, this is the time, now that AFTA has started, this is the time to ensure that, you know, the conversation with big African private sector is initiated to ensure that what can they also do to ensure that they can support the completion of these infrastructure projects. Because we all know that trading is made more efficient when we have good roads, when, you know, it reduces time, it reduces cost, all these other things. Of course, we need to bear in mind when the roads are very good, there's also the issue of, you know, road accidents. So we need to also bear that in mind about how we make it, you know, more sanitized. But the bottom line is that if you want to trade the speed with which we have been talking around AFTA, under the umbrella of AFTA, we need to make sure that every member state of the AU has a trade corridor that links up to each other in the region. In West Africa, I can give you an example that I know that they have already started talking about the Abidjan-Lagos corridor. They've already started it. I think the scheduled time is for 2022-2023, when member states, citizens will be able to drive. And not now, it's not about flying. You should be able to drive from Nigeria to all the way up to Dakar within 6 hours. That's the conversation that ECOWAS is having. And it should be possible so that you're complementing what is happening with the airlines. But people, the ordinary individuals who also want to trade can also, you know, make it happen without necessarily having to, burden themselves with flying. So these things are happening in West Africa. I know the similar things are happening in East Africa as well. I think the LAPSET is quite advanced in East Africa, connecting parts of East Africa, the Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, Uganda, all those countries together as well. These are the kind of things that we need to do, and then synergize them in a way under the umbrella of the PIDA program, for example. For me, that is how I see it, because it doesn't make sense to create another policy and regulatory system that is devoid of, that does not include the AU. So PIDA the AU's program on infrastructure needs to play a very critical role in this conversation. It needs to start being a bit more proactive, because it is already a space that has been happening for 6 years. So now we need to make sure that it links up with the after conversation, after Secretariat, and all the institutions that are working hard to ensure that after is implemented. We need to make sure that PIDA has a greater say on making infrastructure happen, speaking to big private sector to ensure what are their standards, that these are the standards that we're. And of course, Alan also spoke to the issue of the standards organization. African standards organizations are also beefing themselves up to make sure that there's an African standard, there's a made in Africa thing. It would not be prudent to have all these contractors who are building for us also mostly coming from, let's say, China. Unfortunately, that is, you know, a lot of that has been the case. We know in Ethiopia, the tram lines, for example, were developed by the Chinese. We also know in Kenya, the very good railway cutting across the country developed by Chinese. So these are the things that we also need to be wary of as well, to have a made in Africa contractor, maybe a made in Africa database that will allow us to identify which contractors in Southern Africa, in East Africa can come and, you know, build certain, you know, infrastructure for us. And this would all be under the ambit of PIDA. For me, I think we need to remind ourselves that AFTA is an AU program. We need to begin to use AFTA to rejig not only the regional economic communities, but also to rejig and recalibrate what the AU has been doing all along, to make the AU a lot better than it has been, and to pull in all the AU agencies that have not been working, to remind them that now is your time to make the AU the global player that Aspiration 7 of Agenda 2063 talks about. It is possible to do that. So we need to be innovative. We need to find different ways of promoting this Made in Africa brand. And like I said, whether it's in a database of Made in Africa contractors, whether it's pooling, maybe creating a special unit for AFTA and the PIDA program, or all these things, we need to get our AU policymakers and also the African private sector to begin engaging these AU systems a lot more, because I don't want us to get to the stage where private sector now begins to say that because they had been calling for a larger market, now it is their turn to enjoy, so to speak. They need to understand that the AU, the African Continental Free Trade Area, would not have happened if the AU did not put in the necessary infrastructure, the effort, the time, the manpower to make sure that it happened. So this has to be the AU's time as well. For me, we need to get the AU to work, use every possible, you know, corner, every possible manpower to make sure that the AU works for all of us. And I think infrastructure is obviously going to be very key. And even as we're talking, the regional economic communities are doing theirs, like we see with ECOWAS, like we see with East Africa Community Lapset, like we've seen with Southern Africa, and even in North Africa, where the North Africa, the roads are very good. I mean, when you look at the do across comparative analysis, you see that the roads in North Africa are a lot better than probably in West Africa overall, West Africa and East Africa. I think second is Southern Africa. The roads are very, very good there as well. But what is it that we can pick from each region, you know, to bring to bear under, let's say, this PIDA framework that I've been talking about, to ensure that we can, you know, each region is that the whole thing becomes a lot more inclusive. So that's how I would frame this question for now.
Thank you, Emma, Alan, and of course you, our listener, for this comprehensive discussion on payments, the standard quality assurance, and legal framework needed to operationalize this trade agreement. Do stay tuned, subscribe, share, comment, and make suggestions, as we do love suggestions. Thank you.